It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudibara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Sunday, February 28th, 2021, and it's my official duty to welcome you into episode 189 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Welcome back to the Jardy minivan in the Jardy garage. So we're sitting here 2 weeks from Selection Sunday. That's right. 2 weeks from the moment that I'm recording this, I will likely be sitting in this exact same spot discussing Ohio State's draw in the 2021 NCAA tournament. So we have that to look forward to. Also coming to you in just about 4 hours removed from the end of a very disappointing Ohio State game. Buckeyes hosted number 9 Iowa earlier today and took a 73-57 loss at Value City Arena that dropped the Buckeyes to 18-7 overall and 12-7 in Big Ten play. With just one regular season game remaining, the Buckeyes will host Illinois on Saturday at 4 p.m. on Senior Day. And that's where we sit as of this moment. It was a rough day at Value City Arena, and it got off to an inauspicious start where you had both teams getting ready to take the court. They're getting ready to announce the Ohio State starters, and the pregame hype video starts to blare over the speakers and the scoreboard at Value City Arena. And you hear Scooney Penn's voice, and you look up and you realize that it's the pregame hype video for the Ohio State Michigan rivalry, which was the prior home game at Value City Arena. So wrong video ends up being played before the game starts. And the players were kind of laughing about it as it was going on. I think everybody recognized that someone just hit the wrong button and these things happened. But it was a little bit of a sign of maybe what was to come, because it kind of went downhill very quickly for Ohio State from there. The Buckeyes won the opening tip. EJ Liddell hits a fadeaway jumper, and the Buckeyes have a 2-0 lead. Right down at the other end, Luka Garza misses his first shot, gets the rebound and scores. Ohio State would never lead again. A couple possessions later, the Hawkeyes got a 3 to make it a 5-2 game. Ohio State would get within 1 on 2 occasions, but from that point, it was all Iowa, frankly. Once Luka Garza scored to make it a 12-8 game with 14:28 remaining in the first half, Ohio State would never again have the ball with a chance to either tie or take the lead. It was that methodical of a game for Iowa. After the game, Chris Holtman said, quote, "We clearly didn't have the normal bounce, and I've got to figure out why. We clearly did not have the emotional juice coming in that we normally do. I did not recognize that would be the case on Saturday. We clearly didn't have it. We've got to get there." Ohio State offense struggled at a high level, the highest level, frankly, that we've seen all year. This was Ohio State's lowest rated offensive performance of the season, and it was at times very difficult to watch. There was a possession during the first half where CJ Walker and Dwayne Washington were almost arguing on the court because, and I can't remember now, one of them was telling the other one that the play needed to go the other way. And they probably lost 4 or 5 seconds on that possession because they just couldn't get themselves lined up. It just seemed like an uphill battle and a slog from the very, very beginning of this game. And that played itself into the way that the first half ended. You had Ohio State pulled within 7 when Dwayne Washington threatened to get loose a little bit. He scored in the paint, and then he hit a 3 to make it a 32-25 game with 3:29 to go. Then in the final 3 minutes and 13 seconds, Iowa would close on a 10-3 run to take a 42-28 lead into the break. During that stretch, you had Dwayne lost the ball on offense. Seth Towns missed a 3. CJ Walker missed a pull-up jumper. EJ Liddell missed a jumper. EJ had a 3-point play on a Luka Garza foul with 41.8 seconds left. And then Dwayne got a 3 with about 4 seconds left that came up short. And the rebound got tipped out long to him. And he grabbed it, and he was at about midcourt, and He just did not, no matter what he did, he didn't have enough time to get the shot off, but he still threw it up from about half court anyway, a clear second or two after the buzzer. Unlike the Michigan State game where he did get the shot off before the buzzer and it was waved off, this one was clearly taken after the buzzer. And of course, it found nothing but net. And of course, it didn't count. And Iowa takes the 42-28 lead into the break. And it was funny. So they are allowing some family members into these games now. And so at the break, I get up to go use the restroom. I'm walking through the concourse and heading back to my seat. And I made eye contact. I don't know who this person was, but someone was walking the other way. Cause it's still, I mean, there's maybe 200 people there. So it's not like you're wall to wall people or bumping into people, but there's big hallway. If you've ever been to Value City Arena, you know what I'm talking about, the big concourse area. And the guy's walking the other way, and we kind of make eye contact because we're crossing paths and we're the only people in the vicinity. And as we get close, he just shakes his head and he just says, "Gross." And I thought, that is about as appropriate as it gets. I mean, it was not a pretty showing for Ohio State. And I was really curious what that second half was going to look like, how they would come out and play to open that second half, because that was such a tough, ugly first half for Ohio State. And coming off of what it was a tough, less than pleasing loss at Michigan State, where the offense really struggled for significant stretches of the game, this now was basically three straight halves of less than stellar offense. So I was very interested to see what would the second half look like. Would they come out with more of a pulse? Would they come out and make a charge? Because for as good as Iowa is offensively, we know the Hawkeyes are not known for their defense. And if there's a team that you could make up a 14-point halftime deficit against, you would make that case for Iowa. I mean, Ohio State is the number three offense in the nation, according to Ken Pom. And Iowa defensively has climbed up to 59th nationally in defense. Iowa's also number two offensively. So you know you got to outscore these guys when you play them. So I was very interested to see if Ohio State could come out and mount some sort of challenge in the second half, because it just seemed like they were chasing that entire first half. So could they settle in, make some shots, make this thing a little more competitive? And they did. Ohio State came out and right off the bat, they got a three-pointer from Justice Suing. And it would be the start of a stretch of six straight possessions where Ohio State would score in what would be a 14-2 lead to open the second half. And it was just, they were just clicking. You go down the list. Suing hits a three. Iowa gets a deep jumper on its next possession when the Buckeyes had really bad ball screen defense and left a guy wide open. But then from there, CJ has a drive. They force a bad shot from Iowa. CJ has another drive. Wieskamp and Luca Garza both miss shots. Justice Suing hits a three from the right corner. Iowa calls timeout. At this point, it's 44-38. The Ohio State bench is starting to go nuts. Iowa gets another missed three. Dwayne Washington goes inside and finishes with this left-handed little like floater over Luca Garza. And after a Luca Garza turnover, CJ Walker scores again. And it's 44-42 here. And we're 3 minutes and 11 seconds into the second half. And you're going, all right, like we got ourselves a game. Here we go. And then Luca Garza scores at the other end. And then CJ Walker gets a pretty good look at a three, but he misses it. And then Iowa would answer that with a three-pointer from Joe Wieskamp, pushed it back to seven. And that was Ohio State's last gasp. It never got really close from that point. Ohio State would briefly get within four when Justin Arnes made his first three-pointer in three games. He didn't have any against Michigan or against Michigan State, but he hits a three with 13:07 to go to make it a 51-47 game. He hit the three from the left corner. But then at the other end, Iowa immediately answers as well. The Hawkeyes got a three right there from, who was it? CJ Frederick, pushing it back to seven, and that it was essentially over from that point. Ohio State got no closer than five the rest of the way. And when you look at some of the numbers that come out of this game, it's kind of wild. And when you look at as well, after they got within 44-42, and like I said, Luca Garza stemmed that run, Ohio State would then go empty on its next four possessions with a couple of turnovers in there. So with the score at 46-42. CJ misses a three, and then Iowa hits a three to make it 49-42. Ohio State comes down. Dwayne misses a three. EJ gets the rebound. He gets tied up. Possession arrow goes to Iowa. Iowa misses a shot. Ohio State ends up committing a shot clock violation, which was just a really poor offensive possession all around. They just, the ball was not moving. Guys were not cutting. Nothing really happened. Dwayne ended up having to, I think it was Dwayne, had to chuck up a shot, and it didn't, had no real prayer going in. Iowa gets a miss at the other end, but then, oh, what was the kid? Number 15. I'm blanking on his name. Oh yeah. Keegan Murray, who I think is really going to be a player here going forward in the Big Ten. But he misses the shot at one end, but he comes down at the other end and gets a steal, which then led to a Luka Garza bucket that made it 51-42. And yeah, that was a really crucial stretch for Ohio State because they had some opportunities. And on three of those possessions there, they didn't even get a shot off, which is less than ideal, certainly, when you're playing against a team like Iowa. So after scoring 14 points there in the first 3 minutes and 11 seconds of the first half, or excuse me, the second half, Ohio State would score 15 points in the final 16 minutes and 49 seconds. So they were never able to string anything together. Iowa was just quicker. Iowa was more in sync. The Hawkeyes finished with 19 assists on 29 made field goals. Ohio State had 8 assists on 23 made field goals. You get on the scoring for Ohio State. EJ Liddell had 15 points, only 1 of 4 from the line, which is surprising for him. But he had 15 points on 7 of 11 shooting. Justice Suing had 12 for Ohio State. He was 4 of 8 from the floor, 2 of 4 from three. CJ had 10 points on 5 of 9 shooting. He had 4 assists, but he also had 4 turnovers. And Dwayne Washington had a tough game as well. He had 7 points. He was 3 of 10 from the floor, 1 of 5 from three. 2 assists, and he had 4 turnovers. So between Ohio State's 2 primary ball handlers, they had combined 8 turnovers in this game. Kyle Young did return to the lineup. We'll talk more about him here in a moment. In 25 minutes, he had 3 points and 5 rebounds. He also got 4 points from Musa Diallo and 5 boards in 17 minutes. After playing 32 minutes in the Michigan State game without Kyle Young, with Kyle back in, Musa's minutes dropped, but he looked pretty decent offensively. He had a really nice drive to the basket, sort of from the right wing. Had a really nice dunk on a lob, and like I said, finished with 5 rebounds. Looked a little less rusty than he did in the Michigan State game. I thought there were a few moments where he looked a little rusty. The Buckeyes also got, like I said, 3 points from Justin Arnes. Zed Key was scoreless, and he missed 1 shot. He had 3 rebounds and 2 fouls in 12 minutes. And Seth Towns had 2 free throws in 9 minutes to close out the scoring for Ohio State. Those 2 points, by the way, move him past 900 for his career, counting his time, obviously, at Harvard. On the Iowa side, Luka Garza leads the way, 24 points on 10 of 16 shooting. He was 2 of 3 from 3, also added 11 rebounds. You also had 19 from Joe Wieskamp, who was 5 of 9 from 3. And after that, a couple of guys chipped in a few points here and there. But the main damage done by Luka Garza and Joe Wieskamp there. So as a team, Ohio State shot 45.1% from the floor, 29.4% from three, and 60% from the line. Iowa was 46.8% from the floor, 41.7% from three, and 55.6% from the line. Iowa only shot 9 free throws, and Ohio State only shot 10 free throws, which was really kind of wild. Both teams, even on points in the paint, which is surprising when I look at it right now, 32 points each. And Iowa won the rebounding battle 34-31. So let's talk a little bit here about Kyle Young. So obviously he misses the Michigan State game. And Chris Holtman said Thursday after that game that Kyle would be evaluated on Friday and have a better idea if he'd be able to play against Iowa. And then the official update on Sunday morning was that they would evaluate Kyle after he went through warmups, see how he was feeling, see how he was doing. And that's when they would determine whether or not he would be able to play. So watched him pretty closely during warmups, and he seemed mostly his normal self, and he continued to progress through warmups. And, you know, they come out for warmups, they go back to the locker room, they come out for warmups, they go back to the locker room, then they come out for like a final time, do a few layups, and then pregame warmups and everything. But in this case, when they were back in the locker room for the second time, so about 15-20 minutes or so to tip, the pregame or the starters were announced for Ohio State, and Kyle Young was included in the starters. So he returned, and he did return to the starting lineup. C.J. Walker also returned to the starting lineup after the last two games and some of the struggles I recounted on here and have written about. Justin Arnes came off the bench in this game, ending a long streak of starts for him. And like I said, so C.J. moved back into the lineup. So this was the starting lineup for really the bulk of the early portion of the season. The exception being there was one game that Holtmann shook up the starting lineup to send a message to some guys. There were the two games that E.J. Liddell missed with mono. And then C.J., with the torn ligaments in his hand, he misses four games. And so this lineup gets sort of broken up. But this was like the opening game starting lineup. You had C.J. Walker, Dwayne Washington, Justice Suing, E.J. Liddell, Kyle Young. And that's who Chris Holtmann went with in this one. In that first game at Iowa, Kyle Young was one of three guys to lead the Buckeyes with 16 points. In that game, he was 2 of 2 from three. He had 6 rebounds, 16 points, like I said, in 32 minutes. Now today, he played 25 minutes. He scored 3 points that came on 1 3-pointer. So interestingly enough, Kyle Young is 3 of 3 from three against Iowa this season. Today, though, he was 0 for 2 from two. He did still finish with 5 rebounds, but just did not look like Kyle Young, frankly. And Chris Holtmann said as much when I asked him after the game. He said, quote, Kyle was not his normal self. Some of that's having a week off and not practicing at all. He gave it his best. I give him credit. But it was definitely, that's a tough ask, I think, of just about anybody that, hey, you haven't played, you haven't practiced in a week. You're coming off of a concussion. So you're going to be maybe, I don't want to say ginger, because obviously they wouldn't clear these guys if they weren't, able to play. I think of myself personally, if I had just earned a if I had just suffered, that's the word I'm looking for, a concussion the last time I was on the court, I might be a little wary the next game. I can't speak to whether or not Kyle was or not, but I think it's reasonable to expect that that might be the case. And then, oh, by the way, you're going to go against the National Player of the Year in Luka Garza. That's a tough ask. So in his playing time, Kyle Young was -3 for his individual plus minus. E.J. Liddell, actually, despite scoring 15 points, he was -14. And Justin Arnes, as I look at this now, in only 18 minutes, he was -15. So as we've discussed on here, that those stats aren't the be-all, end-all. You got to look at them over the course of longer stretches than just one game, but worth noting. And after the game, we're on Zoom. And in general, we'll get two players, sometimes just one player, but that's been seldom. I can only think of maybe one or two times that's happened. And then we'll get Chris Holtmann. So we were told that they were expecting that we would have Justice Suing and E.J. Liddell. And then Chris Holtmann sits down. And we're talking with Holtmann and going through, you know, a couple of things here and there. And then at the end, I asked Chris Holtmann, I said, is there a reason that we won't get to, or we're not talking to players today? And I don't ask this because, and I don't tell you this story because I want you to think like, oh, those poor sports writers who didn't get to talk to the players after the game, just so you aren't wondering why I don't have quotes from players after a game. I don't want you to think I'm not working hard. So Holtmann's answer was, quote, I wanted to be the one to face the music here. They've battled all season. They'll be available all week. It's not that they're not available. In this moment, it's important for me to come out and face the music here. We're going to meet in a little bit. So that was the plan as of Sunday evening. Sometime Sunday night, the players and the coaches were all scheduled to reconvene at Value City Arena and talk about where this team is right now and what's happening. So stay tuned. It's going to be an interesting week here as they get ready to go host Illinois here on Saturday. I want to remind everyone that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast, and that way you won't miss an episode. If you do subscribe, you'll always be in the loop. And if you would, while you take the time to subscribe, 5-star ratings and nice comments are very much appreciated. I've heard from many of you throughout the season, and it's been a joy to just see the feedback continue to grow and to see that somehow we're getting this podcast into the ears of more and more people. So I need to thank all of you who have taken the time to do that. It really does mean a lot, and it helps keep me employed. So thank you to everyone who continues to leave ratings and tell friends and just to increase the numbers for the show. I really, truly do appreciate it. And as always, shouts and prayers to our guy, PDD95. Keep fighting, man. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to dive into this, where this team is, just a little bit more. I'll be right back. So when there's a loss like this, there's plenty to dissect. And some of what I'm doing right now is a little bit more just in the moment, a couple of quick takeaways from the game, a few stats I've had the time to look up. There's going to be more here in these next couple of days because, as I mentioned, Ohio State doesn't play now until Saturday, which is going to be an unbelievably long break compared to the sort of the gamut that I feel like this season has been. It is strange that they would have all these games in such a short span of time and then have 6 days between their penultimate and final games of the season. But that's where we are. And right now the focus on this team has to be the offense because, as we've discussed throughout the year, this was never going to be an elite defensive team. And we've seen that play out, but this remains the third best rated offense in the country. And these last two games, they've looked nothing like that. So I did crunch a couple of quick numbers before I started recording this year. So I was comparing the first 17 games of Big Ten play to the last two games, and everything is down, as you would expect. But here's two areas that especially stick out to me. So through the first 17 games, Ohio State was shooting 37.3% from three-point range. In the last two games, Ohio State is shooting 29%. Buckeyes are 9 for 31 in their last two games. And then at the free throw line, Ohio State was averaging 20.8 free throw attempts in its first 17 games of the season. And in its last two games, Ohio State is averaging 16.5 attempts. And the percentage of makes is down too. Ohio State shot 78.1% from the line through its first 17 games and is shooting 69.7% in its last two. So not only is Ohio State taking, on average, four fewer free throws a game, but it's making almost 10% fewer when it does take them. So That's ultimately not the difference, and that's not why Ohio State lost this game against Iowa. But it does say something about maybe a contributing factor to why it lost, why the Buckeyes lost at Michigan State. And I think it tells you a little bit about, it felt like watching this team today that they looked tired. I saw guys grabbing other guys more on defense as opposed to moving their feet. I felt like shots were coming up short. It just, in general, there seemed to be a fatigue level, and I think that's understandable to an extent. And then I looked and realized that Iowa played the exact same type of schedule, in its last 8 days as well. Ohio State went Sunday, Thursday, Sunday, and Iowa went Sunday, Thursday, Sunday. And you look at the way that Iowa is playing right now, as Ohio State has its first losing streak of the season, Iowa, meanwhile, which is up to number five in KenPom, Iowa, after losing four of five, including the home loss to Ohio State back on February 4th, Iowa's now won five of its last six. And included in there, beat Rutgers at home, beat the brakes off of Michigan State by 30 back on February 13th, went to Wisconsin and won, beat Penn State at home, lost decisively at Michigan on Thursday, 79-57, before rebounding and controlling Ohio State here in this one, 73-57. And part of that in this game today was that Luka Garza basically got what he wanted. I mean, he had 24-11. I didn't feel like Ohio State was able to really do much to slow him or make life very difficult on him, or make life difficult for him, I should say. Holtman was asked specifically about trying to stop Luka Garza, and I'm looking for that quote right now. He said, quote, "As far as stopping him, we couldn't do much, honestly. We weren't able to take away some of his strengths when we were playing him one-on-one. When we didn't have enough attention to detail. Since some of that is we had younger, less experienced guys on him." But he said they had a good attack with some of our double teams, and they just made some good shots. And I had a really good quote passed along to me from a friend of mine on the Iowa beat. It's Chad Lystico, who covers Iowa for the Des Moines Register. And he sent me a quote after the game. We were kind of messaging back and forth. He did travel. He was at the game, but it's so weird. I haven't spent a lot of time talking to people face to face, at least until I feel like a few more of us are vaccinated. So even though he was a couple of seats away from me, we didn't actually speak in person. And that's kind of a rambling story. You probably don't need to know. But at any rate, he sent me this quote from Luka Garza after the game. He said, quote, "Chris Holtman is one of the best coaches in the country. He's going to make adjustments. In that first game, he just kind of took me out of the game, made me shoot a lot of jump shots, didn't let me get a lot of touches in the post. I knew what I was going up against and just had to be able to trust my teammates and try to do whatever I could against the double team. As an aside, I'm really going to miss watching Luka Garza. It's interesting because I didn't enjoy watching Ethan Happ And I feel like he was the most recent player in the Big Ten where he was a big guy who was just like an unstoppable force down low. But his game was so limited. I feel like you couldn't play him late because he was such a liability at the line. He couldn't shoot. I mean, he was so good and so lethal down low, but that was like the only thing he did. And I didn't enjoy watching that a whole lot, but I like watching Luka Garza. I'm going to miss seeing him in the Big Ten. That dude, I mean, you can hate him if you want because he's going to probably beat your team and he's probably going to beat a few guys up doing it, but he just plays so hard and he's just fun to watch. And I'm going to miss getting to see him. And I like that he has quotes like that. He's very very thoughtful. He's very, very thorough in his responses. It's not just a cliche. I'll never forget watching him last season as he was really ascending into that like superstar level. But being at Iowa City and watching him come out before the game and like people kept, you know, random people that were maybe courtside for this reason or that reason, they would come to him, "Hey, will you take a picture? Can we get an autograph?" And he like obliged everybody until it was time for him to really get down to business and start getting ready for the game. Like he wasn't too big for that. He didn't blow people off. I've really enjoyed getting to watch him and kind of appreciate him from afar. So that's my two cents there on Luka Garza. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on their very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with Consumer Choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best in business in the window category with the Columbus Dispatch. The list goes on and on, but it's important to point out that their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they can make a statement like, "Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business." So now here's the big question. How much to make of this streak? How much do we assume that Ohio State has peaked and that the season is over, even though there's still games to be played? Or do you just sort of take it all into consideration and maybe withhold some judgment? How much do we make of this? And as I was getting ready for this game today, I was actually thinking back that this all kind of reminds me a little bit of Holtman's second season. And if you'll recall, after the calendar flipped over to 2019, Ohio State was 12-1. And there's a lot of skepticism about that 12-1 record, because they hadn't really beaten great teams to that point. You go back and you look at it, and they opened the season with the win at Cincinnati. Then you had home win against Purdue Fort Wayne. They went and beat Creighton at Creighton. These ended up being the wins that got them in the NCAA tournament. Then you got the stretch. You beat South Carolina State, Samford, Cleveland State. They lost to Syracuse at home. They beat exhausted Minnesota team at home that had played two nights prior. They beat Illinois at the United Center, and Illinois was not good. Then they came home, they beat Bucknell, they beat Youngstown State, they beat a bad UCLA team, they beat High Point. So you're 12-1, and you're going to face Michigan State, which at this point was ranked third in KenPom. None of those first 13 games, nobody was ranked higher than 29th in KenPom at that point. And that game against Michigan State there was number 14 Ohio State, number 8 Michigan State. They battled. It was entertaining as hell. And Michigan State won that game 86-77, in large part because Caleb Wesson fouled out with a couple minutes to go. And if you go back and you do a deep dive, listen to the old podcasts, or go back and find the stuff that I wrote, I really felt that game in that moment. I came into it with plenty of skepticism about how good Ohio State really was. But the Buckeyes played what I thought was an elite Michigan State team down to the wire. And I thought that loss validated a bit the national ranking and the belief that, okay, yeah, Ohio State is an upper level team, maybe not a national championship team, but this is a team that is, they're not an afterthought. They're not, you know, they deserve to be ranked. They're a team to take seriously this season. And then I was proven wrong. Ohio State from that point lost 5 straight and 6 of 7 before pulling out of the tailspin and ultimately reaching the NCAA tournament and winning a game. But I say all that to say that after last Sunday's loss to Michigan, which was unanimously regarded as a high-level basketball game, arguably the best basketball game of the season, and a game that clearly showed that both those teams were elite and both those teams are contenders, I wondered if we were facing something similar here with this Ohio State team. And now you have that tough loss at Michigan State, and you have this loss today where you get blown out at home. I feel like there are some parallels there. There's obviously not much season left. I think the time off will be good for Ohio State. Let them dial in on a few things and maybe get some guys a little bit more healthy. But Chris Holtman was asked about the balance between being too critical, or about being critical of your team's failures and struggles, and also recognizing like the level of competition that they're facing to close the season, because you are facing a stretch here, starting with that Michigan game where you play the number three team in the country. You go play Michigan State, which did lose here on Saturday, but is a team that I can't remember if Michigan State plays Saturday or Sunday, but at any rate, Spartans kind of ran out of gas here this weekend after beating Ohio State. But that was always going to be a tough game to go up there and win. And then you close it out with a home game against an Iowa team ranked 9th, an Illinois team ranked 5th. It's a daunting stretch. You look at three of your last four games being against top six teams in KenPom, and you're one of the other top six teams. So how much do you balance the critical eye of we need to get better with the bigger picture of we are also playing three of the top five other teams in the nation? Holtman said, quote, "I think it's hard in the moment and it's hard for all of us. As much as you want to look at the closing stretch and talk about what it is with three top 10 teams and a team that's tough to play at their place, what we can own is areas as coaches and players where we just have to get better." And there were plenty of areas where they can get better. As I mentioned earlier, 13 turnovers against an Iowa team that's not known for forcing teams to turn the ball over. Some missed assignments. I mean, Iowa led by what it led by at the half, despite going 2 of 10 from three in the first half, I think it was. Let me double check that. I could be crossing my wires here. Excuse me. In the first half, it was Ohio State that was 2 of 10. Iowa was 5 of 14 from three during the first half, but it could have been way worse. Iowa was getting some pretty wide open looks that just were not falling. And that was part of the feeling of, boy, Ohio State's really got to figure some things out offensively, because if they don't, some of these shots will start falling. And then ultimately they did. But there were things that Ohio State could have done better, even if they didn't make enough shots. They could have done a lot of things better. And Holtman said, quote, "Certainly this is unlike any stretch I've been a part of. What I'm hoping is that it gets us better, and it'll certainly be a measure of our ability to handle disappointment and adversity and challenges." So as we said, prior to this losing streak, Ohio State hadn't lost consecutive games all season. So this is a fresh lesson in adversity on the eve of the calendar flipping in March. And this, I'm breaking up these Holtman quotes here, but this was the longest sort of in-depth answer that we got from Chris Holtman on anything after this game. And he really put some thought into what he was saying here. And that's why I thought it was really interesting and worth visiting. He said, quote, "This is certainly the first time this season we've had a stretch like this. You can look at it and you can anticipate struggle, but it's certainly challenging in the moment. The balance between recognizing that we're playing a ridiculously hard closing stretch and then owning areas we have to get better is the challenge for us moving forward. It's a balance because you don't want to excuse poor play by just sheer quality of competition, even though we recognize the quality of competition that we're playing. We've got to get better in areas and use this to get better." And now they have that opportunity. Like we said, they have 6 days in between games. We'll see what the team meeting on Sunday, what that maybe resolves or what that's able to get out there. But it's going to be an interesting week for Ohio State. And I think this Illinois game is going to be crucial for them, because and they'll tell you that win or loss or win or lose, all that matters is that they play better. And that should give them the confidence that they need going into the Big Ten tournament. And there's certainly an element of truth to that. But I think that for this team to truly feel good about itself, I don't think there's any other outcome than a win at home against Illinois on Saturday that will do that. So I think there's a lot riding on this last game of the regular season. I haven't looked at Big Ten tournament seeding implications. We'll get to that as we get a little closer and I start figuring out hotels and things like that and childcare and all the things that come with March. But it's going to be a big week for Ohio State. Now, before we go, we've got two birthdays here to shout out before we officially end February. 21 years ago today, Oasis released its fourth studio album, Standing on the Shoulder of Giants. That album turns 21, which blows my mind. I was in high school. That was my junior year of high school. And I wanted nothing more than Oasis to just break into the realm of the new metal and the boy bands and all the pop garbage that back when MTV played music videos, they were still playing music. I wanted Oasis back on that stage. Like they were my band. That was such a big thing in high school to, like, you know, you had your music and you wanted it to be popular. And I was the only person that liked Oasis. And that's such a deeply flawed album, but oh, I love that album so much. I spent so much time with that. I could play, or at least back in the day when I had time, I could play most of it on the guitar. I would say probably about 70% of that album. I mean, Go Let It Out is just an unbelievable jam. It ends with Roll It Over, which is one of the all-time underrated Oasis songs. We've got Where Did It All Go Wrong, which is love that song. Gas Panic is unbelievable. And then there's some clunkers. You got Little James, and which might be the worst Oasis album of all time, or song of all time. Put Your Money Where Your Mouth is not a good song. And then you have I Can See a Liar, which of all songs they performed live on David Letterman back in the day. I remember this very clearly. And Liam Gallagher wore this hideous coat, just type of thing that only a rock star can pull off. But I say all that to say, give Standing on the Shoulder of Giants a listen. It's got some moments. It makes me very happy. It's the only Oasis album I don't have on vinyl, oddly enough. And I'm going to have to fix that. And it's also the 10th anniversary of the debut album from BDI, which was when Oasis broke up and everybody minus Noel Gallagher went off and started another band with basically a bunch of demos laying around from some of the Oasis days. And you get Different Gear, Still Speeding, which is just a really underrated album. The Roller is a gem. There's a song called Beatles and Stones on there that I love. It ends with a song called The Morning Sun, which is epic. Yeah, there's a song called The Beat Goes On about where Liam Gallagher sings, I'm the last of a dying breed, which is so true. He said, there's a line, I'll throw it away just to prove that I can. I'm the last of a dying breed. And it just, man, did that hit home. And then there's a song, Kill for a Dream. And then I'll cut it off after here. But I remember listening to this album for the first time. It was the first post-Oasis anything that the band, any of the members of the band had done. And I can remember the apartment that my wife and I had. And I remember listening to this album. And there's a line where he sings, staring at the spot on the wall, here's my glass and here's one for you, because these dark glasses need something to do. And I could picture him singing, I could picture Liam singing this to Noel post-Oasis breakup, and it broke my heart. It legitimately made me tear up because I'm a softy and whatever, but it really hit. And yeah, and that album is a decade old, and I don't know how that happened, but go listen to it. It's really, really underrated, and I really enjoy it. So anyway, thanks for indulging me on all that. It's big. February 28th is a big day in the world of the Oasis obsessives. So, and now I'm going to get out of here. As always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you to Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, for stitching this all together. I'll be back sometime leading into Senior Day. Expect a podcast later in the week, maybe recapping where things stand heading into the Illinois game and what might lie beyond that. So make sure you're subscribed. It'll pop right in whenever that gets recorded. So until then, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.